It was a little over a year ago that the first episode of The Mandalorian debuted on Disney+. Can you remember a world before Baby Yoda was a whole thing? Now that season 2 is underway, we're going to go back and revisit our discussion of a show that has since gone on to become a digital phenomenon while launching a million memes. I'm Glenn Weldon. We're talking about The Mandalorian in this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Ancestry. This year, gather round the family tree with Ancestry. Give your loved ones an Ancestry gift membership to let them unwrap their history and discover the fascinating people in their past, or surprise them with Ancestry DNA so they can uncover their origins. Ancestry's holiday sale is the perfect time to give a gift that connects them to family in new ways. So even if you can't all be under one roof this year, come together over your family story. Go to Ancestry.com/NPR.
Welcome back. Here with me in the studio today is Mallory Yu. She is the movie editor for All Things Considered here at NPR. Hey, Mallory.
Hey there.
Also with us is NPR White House reporter Aisha Roscoe. Hi, Aisha.
Hello.
This is not what you would normally be doing today.
No, but this is so much more happy, and it's not a somber occasion like other things I'm covering.
That's good. And finally, joining us from New York is Daisy Rosario, who is an executive producer at Stitcher. Glad to have you, Daisy.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
All right, going to set the table right now with some blue milk. The Mandalorian was created by Jon Favreau, actor, not podcaster, and he's writing 6 of the 8 episodes. It stars Pedro Pascal, as we mentioned, as one of a race of fierce warriors who have been scattered throughout the galaxy and now live in the shadows. He takes a job to bring in a bounty, which turns out to be, and if you've been on social media the past few weeks, you know this already, a really just aggressively cute, I would say militantly cute, infant of whatever species Yoda is. Now, this is not our first Mandalorian at the rodeo. The original trilogy's Boba Fett was a Mandalorian. And over the years, there's been a lot written about Mandalorians in the so-called expanded universe of books and comics, etc. But in 2014, when Disney bought the franchise, and with the new Star Wars trilogy on the horizon, Lucasfilm said all of that material is now non-canonical, and kind of dubbed it Star Wars Legends. Now, that is a gross oversimplification, but there's a lot more to it. But the most important thing is we're kind of going into this series with a blank slate. So, Daisy, what'd you think, Mandalorian?
I was really pleasantly surprised, honestly. I thought it was a lot of fun. It starts with some action. I won't say what happens, but it starts with some action. So it does at least pull you in right away. And I'm sure we're all going to want to say some things about Baby Yoda or Yoda Baby or whatever you want to call the incredibly cute thing that is puppet. I'm somebody who's generally very averse to spoilers, in part just because I have the kind of memory that like will hook on to certain things. So I'm just like, please don't tell me because I will remember it and I will be thinking about it even if I do not want to. So I say that to say that just even knowing about Baby Yoda is a bit of a spoiler in and of itself that is unavoidable, clearly, at this point with how much everyone has run with their love and affection for how cute it is. But when it first shows up, even though I knew how cute it was, I yelped in my apartment. I said to my cat, I was like, oh my God, it's still so cute. I knew it was coming and it manages to be, it's so freaking cute. And so the stories itself, you know, we watched the first 4 episodes. There's more to come in the season, but it dives in right away with the action. And I feel like so far the storytelling is interesting. And it also just seems to me like I don't have kids, but as I have a 14-year-old sister, it feels like real family content in that way that so many things I think get parsed by age. I can see people who are fans of kind of like Westerns and things like that and people who are fans of Star Wars going like, here's a genre thing that I can watch with my kids. And they won't get all those points of reference, but they'll understand why they're compelled by the cuteness of Baby Yoda.
Sure. It seems like it is settling more into a Western mode as it goes along. It started with a very Western thing. A guy walks into a bar, things happen. It seems to be kind of adopting those contours more rigorously as it goes along. What'd you think, Aisha?
I really liked it. And I am not some huge Star Wars fangirl. Like, I know of it. Obviously, you can't escape it in pop culture. And I've seen the newer movies. But, like, my husband and my son, they know it, right? Like, I mean, my son was immediate. He's six, and he was like, you know, Boba Fett or whatever. Yeah. Like when he started talking about it, and I was like, what? Who are you? Okay. But so they're very into it. But I enjoyed it just as I just love, you know, fantasy, another world, and I did feel very invested in it, even though you have this character, the lead character Mando. Mm-hmm. How do you see emotion?
Right.
At times. And so the only thing that I felt from it was at times I wondered about the stakes. Mm-hmm. And did I feel like, are there actually stakes here? I don't know that, especially in the first four episodes, we don't know the stakes, and we don't know if there's something that's really going to come to really put pressure on the scenarios that are kind of playing out.
Right. We should mention, and we did briefly, that the Mandalorian, the main character, we called him Behelmeted because he never takes his helmet off. And that's what you're referring to. Where do you get this emotion from?
Yeah.
Because Pascal is playing it kind of like a laconic, you know, gunfighter, drifter kind of guy.
Yes. Yeah.
So he doesn't throw a lot of emotion into his voice, which puts a lot of pressure on pretty much everybody else.
Yes. Yeah. And that whole helmet thing, and like, how does he eat? That was like one of, in my notes. I had my notebooks. How does this work with this helmet?
Because they never take their helmets off in front of other people, I worry about the Mandalorian as a species, about their skincare regimen. I mean,
yes,
I think
yes,
there must be
yes,
so
yes,
much oil underneath.
Yes,
underneath.
I immediately thought of the skin.
Yes, yes.
And just like shaving.
And yeah.
Yeah. Getting to the crux, finding the crux eventually, yes. Now, Mallory, you're more a hard science girl, right? Because you love The Expanse, which I think of as more hard science than this, which has a lot of fantasy elements.
What
do you think?
My love of science fiction comes from Star Wars.
Okay.
Like, I love the space opera and living in the world of Star Wars. I was always going to be predisposed to liking this show at the very least because I want to stay in this world and I like being in this world. I like the lore and I like seeing characters popping out and or references to characters that I only know about because I read about them in a comic book. I think Pedro Pascal is doing with the limits that he has. I mean, even with a helmet, even with sort of that laconic flat affect in his voice, I still feel like I know what he's feeling or what he's about to do, what he's thinking. I think his body language really comes across and I enjoy watching him on the screen, even though I can't see his face, which normally would really bother me.
Right. Yeah.
I also really love Gina Carano, who plays Cara Dune.
Mm-hmm.
She shows up, she kicks a lot of butt. I'm probably biased, but she looks like someone who, as Twitter likes to say, could step on me.
Yeah.
And I like that. the pace is a little slower,
right,
I think, than I'd like.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it's part of the genre it's using as influence. You know, there are a lot of sort of slow, lingering shots of landscape, empty landscapes and windmills and things. But if I were keeping up with this week by week,
right,
I might find like the pace was a little too slow to keep me really invested, as opposed to binging, you know, four or five episodes at once, which
sure
is what I did and I really liked.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, this corner of the Star Wars universe, you know, rogues, bounty hunters, wretched hive of scum and villainy, that corner is not necessarily the one that I respond to most because I like the Jedis and the lightsabers and the Force lightning. I like the magic stuff. But the thing about any Star Wars property is if you just hang out long enough, they might make a whole big thing about, oh, no, this is grim and gritty and grubby.
Yeah.
Eventually, the magic happens.
Yeah.
I mean, it's part of the warp and weft
it's
of this universe. It's in the world.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying it. I'm looking forward to it every week. Past couple weeks, as I mentioned, it's not so much evoking Western genre, it is being a Western. I think Star Wars always works best when it is evoking, tweaking, paying homage to, synthesizing a bunch of different kind of staples of various genres instead of simply presenting them, which is what it's doing here.
I agree. I like Westerns, but I didn't grow up with Westerns as kind of part of my movie canon. It's
mm-hmm.
not something that I grew up watching and loving with my parents because my dad is an immigrant. So for me, it almost looks old. It feels retro
right
in a way.
But, you know, I think this is interesting for me because I always hated Westerns growing up.
Same.
But and so now I'm like, well, now I'm like starting to rethink it because I do like I like this because always when I was growing up, I did feel like they were too slow and I just didn't get, you know, my stepfather was always watching these Westerns and I would be like, why are we sitting here watching them walking around in the dust and just like going to the but this I do feel like I feel like there are enough connections there, like human connections, or not necessarily human, because they're not all the species aren't humans.
Sure.
And you get some like fun here and there and
Yeah, there are fun moments when the Mandalorian gets to play off of other characters.
Yes, sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
And Daisy, what do you make of the Western aspect of the Mandalorian?
I think it's interesting because I am also someone who didn't grow up with it. And if you ask me, you know, I love film. I know a lot about different genres. Western is one of the genres I don't know as well. I think when I saw, for example, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, as I was sitting there watching it, I was like, there are references in this that I know I'm not getting because I know Tarantino enough to know the types of things that he pulls from. I feel like a show like this is pulling more from obvious tropes that I've experienced through the larger pop culture osmosis and the aspects that I do know. So I, in that sense, I could like recognize it. But I think the length of it also plays into that for me. I think in general, this is the kind of show that I will wait to binge because of how short the episodes are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're around 30 minutes. So, you know, not as much happens in them as would happen in an hour-long drama. And so in that sense, I feel like I'm being eased into it. I'm like, oh, okay, these are the parts of this I recognize. And then I know Star Wars really well. So I'm able to kind of fill that in. So to me, it's like enough of that without feeling like I'm going to be put off by the parts of the genre that I just don't get or know as well.
Right. I mean, yeah, you mentioned there are slow parts, there are action parts. I would say there are missions and there are cutscenes because this is so clearly a video game. As many people have mentioned, you come back from a mission, you get a choice to get a signet on your armor or to upgrade your armor. You unlock a new ability. And it's like, are you kidding me? This is just so straight down the middle. But I mean, this is this is fun. And I think we're getting, actually, I think we're getting a lot more of that in culture, a lot more of things that feel like video games where everything is kind of blending together. Of course, it's not just a video game. It's also, you know, a samurai film.
Yeah.
It's if you know the manga Lone Wolf and Cub, that dynamic between Mando and Baby Yoda is very similar. But we're also getting a lot of very weird, weird good. I'm not saying weird bad. I'm saying weird good cameos from actors I love who I would never expect to see in the Star Wars universe. Taika Waititi, of course, he's there. He's kind of Thor adjacent. He's also actually going to be directing the finale, but he played that assassin robot guy. Amy Sedaris.
I squinted at the screen and was like, is that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Really?
Same.
You just draw some eyebrows on the screen and you're there. There she is. Oh, that's her.
But I was really pleasantly surprised. I love seeing actors that I know in Star Wars, and she's one that I really like, and it was just really fun.
Yeah, okay. I have some thoughts about Werner Herzog, 77 hell-damn ass years old. He directed A Gear of the Wrath of God and Fitzcarraldo, dozens of features, dozens of documentaries. He's mounted dozens of operas, and you make him say, I hear you are the best bounty hunter in the Parsec. And you're like, Parsec? The identity puck is incomplete. We only have his fob. And you're like, don't make him say fob. Guys, this man.
I mean, come on, Glenn. If you had the opportunity to make Werner Herzog say Parsec, wouldn't you?
This is just a thing that I have to get over, right? Because if I can get over Robert Redford saying Hail Hydra, I can get over Werner Herzog saying fob.
I mean, the thing with him being on The Mandalorian is that I can't stop thinking about all of the articles that have been written about Werner Herzog being in The Mandalorian. So, you know, when he showed up for the first time, I thought, oh, that's Werner Herzog. And then when Baby Yoda shows up, I just can't stop thinking about being on that set when Werner Herzog sees that little puppet for the first time and starts crying.
Yeah.
My goodness.
What would that have been like? Mind is,
I'm sure.
I would love to have witnessed that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. And it's funny, too, because of how huge Star Wars is in our shared pop culture. And, you know, I don't really watch trailers anymore. I don't really, I try to just keep away from the chatter and the lead up because there's just too much information and people are so obsessed. And so I didn't know that Werner Herzog was in it or anything related to it until I started seeing the articles that were like, he told them to keep the puppet and he cried because it was so beautiful. And these things that are so funny. Like, they're just so interesting. He's just such an interesting person. I can't think of, you know, people that have had probably two more interesting careers than Werner Herzog and Amy Sedaris. So, yeah, the cameos in this are just fascinating. And then just such an interesting press, you know, circle around that to be able to go like, yes, Werner Herzog convinced them. They thought about CGI and, you know, he told them, don't be cowards or something like that, which is amazing.
Well, he was right.
He was right.
Yes, he was. Right. He spoke for the people.
And Baby Yoda, we stand a legend.
Yes.
We stand a Star Wars legend.
Let's talk about the puppeteering, though, because there is a scene. Aisha, there's a scene when the Mandalorian is flying with Baby Yoda, and Baby Yoda reaches over to press a button, and then he gets corrected, and then he reaches over, press a button again, and then this is such good puppeteering, and it's old school puppeteering. It's Muppeteering. Yeah. It's great. Yeah. It is such good puppet acting.
Yeah. That was the thing with me. Like, I didn't even realize it. I hadn't, like, been reading a lot about The Mandalorian. And so when I saw it, I was like, I knew that it was a puppet because people had been saying, had been speculating that's why people are so connected to it. I just know that it looked amazing. And that's what I was thinking during that scene. This is why you deal with them, even though they're annoying, because you look at their face and you're like, oh, I'm going to just deal with you.
I know, they're so cute.
But I love Muppets. So the idea of like having this puppet that is so amazing and just has so rich and the emotion that it gives, it's amazing that you can get that. And if you can get that from puppets, I think they need to do more puppets.
Yes.
I'm constantly talking about physical props. I love physical props. Yes. I think puppets just add so much dimension and weight physically on the screen. You know, when he picks up the puppet, it looks like he's picking something up with weight, and you feel that it is real. You know, the Mandalorian and Baby Yoda, not Yoda, can interact with each other, and the puppeteer can control those movements to respond to what the Mandalorian or Pedro Pascal is doing. And I like that. I think that there's an energy and a weight in seeing something physical that actors can then relate to.
Yep. Daisy, any thoughts?
Yeah, it's just so cute. Uh-huh. And it's not just that it is cute. I think, you know, to your point, Aisha, it's cute in that way where you want to protect it. It's cute in that way where it's charming. I think, you know, one problem with CGI often, you know, it ages poorly and the emotions aren't necessarily there. And I mean, obviously we've gotten a lot better to be out of the uncanny valley and such, but it feels so real. And that just adds so much more to it. And there's so much more to the use of Baby Yoda than even the memes would bring you to know, which I have to say was very exciting, actually.
Agreed.
Okay, final question, lightning round. Will we see his face in the final episode of this season? You go ahead, Mallory. Pedro Pascal, Mallory.
I want to say yes, because how can you cast Pedro Pascal and not see his face?
So that's a yes from you.
That's a yes from me. I hope I'm seeing him.
Okay, Aisha?
I say no or no and a half, and like maybe they'll take it off and you just see the back of his head.
Ah.
I almost feel like you need to save that longer than just the end of the first season.
Okay.
Like it's a really world-breaking
event. It would be a huge deal.
All right.
Yeah.
Daisy, where do you come down?
I think that we probably will see it, but I think we'll see it in private. You know, I mean, we do know what the actor looks like, so I feel like they'll show us something. I also say that because of some of the dialogue, just some of the things that are said to the character. I'm like, we're gonna see this. I don't know that we'll see it with other people, though, right away.
Daisy is right, everybody. Daisy is right that we will see it, and we'll see it in private. Okay, well, tell us what you think about The Mandalorian Season 1 or Season 2. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. And that brings us to the end of our show. We will see you all tomorrow.
Since the 1980s, hip-hop and America's prisons have grown side by side.
And we're going to investigate this connection to see how it lifts us up and holds us down.
Hip-hop is talking about what we live, trying to live the American dream. Felon at the American Dream.
I'm Sydney Madden.
I'm Rodney Carmichael. Listen now to the Louder Than a Riot podcast from NPR Music,
where we trace the collision of rhyme and punishment in America.